Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hawk Talk podcast on the Q Media Podcast Network. I'm your host, Parker Limestone, and I got some special guests with me today. We're going to talk about some QU baseball and some professional wrestling. So, boys, you want to take some time to introduce yourselves?
I'm Tony. I've been on this podcast about two or three times, so I'm excited to be back.
I'm Connor Megan. I've also been doing this a couple times here, but, you know, I'm just here for to talk about sports. Let's have some fun.
Absolutely, and a lot of sports are starting to wrap up here at QU, but the big thing that the three of us like to talk about is some baseball. It's been an interesting season so far for the Quincy baseball team.
To say the least.
13-20 overall as of this recording of the podcast, and 10-11 in the conference. And currently, they are tied for sixth in the conference, which is a tie between them, Missouri S&T, and UIS for the 6, 7, 8 spots. But what's the things we've noticed as we get towards the kind of final stretch of this season that's really hampered the Hawks this year?
I think, and I know we talk about fielding and pitching a lot, but I'm going to go to the hitting side of it. I think we are leaving too many men on base. I think that whoever starts the inning usually does pretty well to get on for the most part of some sorts within the first two outs. And I feel like after that happens, I feel like they kind of just pressure themselves too hard and we just leave runners stranded constantly.
See, I still feel like the bullpen's the biggest problem is they seem to give up more runs than our starters, and we're losing a lot of close games, which is the big problem that I'm seeing.
No, I agree. I think bullpen is a problem, but I'm saying, like, you know, we go over the bullpen so much here, we don't take time to look at the offensive side of things, and that's just another problem that I see is that we leave people stranded.
Absolutely. I mean, let's go back into this last series they played against Lewis here at QU Stadium. Usually the Hawks play a lot better at QU Stadium, but during their last series at Lewis, here's how many runs they put up in each game. Game one, they put up 4. Three of those were courtesy of the 3-run walk-off home run from J.D. Ortiz, so for realistic purposes, really 1 run there. 2 runs in game 2, 6 runs in game 3, and only 2 runs in game 4. And I can tell you in game 4, they were leaving guys on base constantly at second and third. And getting to the home stretch of the season, the final stretch, you got to score all those runners, especially like if you're going to contend with like a Maryville or in the current series they're in with UIndy, they're going to need to score runs when they get those guys in scoring position.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you're putting up games where you got like 6 runs, that should be games that you should probably win. I mean, they're, you know, can't do much about the other team hitting well, but I mean, other than have better pitch commands and all that, and have some confidence. Because I feel like when it comes to pitching, I feel like the only person that we see with confidence is Kern.
Agreed.
And his hypeness after he, you know, gets out of an inning or something, even when he has one runner on and it's not that big of a worry, a runner on first, and then he strikes out the last guy, you see him, like, trying to fire up the guys right before they hit and stuff. So I think it's awesome to see that. But to see it reciprocated is, you know, John Cena'd. It's not seen.
Crazy reference, but I completely agreed.
Well, and you were talking about that, Tony. Like, just yesterday from the recording of this podcast, Griffin Kern made another appearance against the University of Indianapolis Greyhounds. And Kern went 7 innings, only allowed 3 hits, 1 walk, and had 11 strikeouts. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at. And the Hawks were up 2-0 when he came out of the game.
And what's the best part about that is, if you keep up with Twitter when the Hawks are playing like I do, he had 9 of those strikeouts in the first 4 innings. So the fact that he went with only 2 strikeouts from innings 5 to 7, I mean, that means our defense was playing well and that, you know, he was giving them makeable plays, whereas you don't see that often out of the bullpen and stuff. You see a lot of, like, if a defense has a chance to make a play, it's not an easy play.
I agree, and even like when we talk about bullpen, the big thing about the bullpen is the walks they give up. Just the pure amount of walks, free passes, hit by pitches, and Roman Harrison, who's been the Hawks' closer all year, He gave up 2 earned runs and only 2/3 of an innings pitched. He gave up only 1 hit. So you would be wondering, where did all those other runs come from? Well, 4 walks.
Well, I mean, that just comes back to the confidence and the command and everything else. So,
well, and like we look, I'm pulling it up right here for the stats when it comes to pitching. Like, there's only 2 bullpen guys in the Hawks pitching staff that have below 5 ERAs, and that's a 4.74 for Harrison and a 4.26 for Hempelman. Technically, Drager has a 0 ERA, Ben Drager, but that's only on 1 appearance, so you kind of have to take that with a pinch of salt. But Griffin Kern still continues to have a fantastic year. 9 starts, 2.89 ERA. I mean, just give the praise at that point. If he's not at least in some all GLVC pitching staff, there's a problem
here. I'll be very shocked.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be that close, to be honest. He should be there 100%.
But yeah, like you kind of talked about, Connor, like the bullpen struggles on the year have been a huge factor. And we kind of talked about this as we came into the podcast today. I honestly just think it's just the design that the bullpen has in terms of like 7 innings of Griffin Kern. Usually they're like in a 2-0 game, you like to go to a setup guy in the 8th, then your closer for the final 9th. But it seems like they try to the Hawks this year have tried to kind of subvert that idea and are like, no, we're going to have our closer go 2 innings instead of 1 inning. And I also feel like that can overuse your closer a lot, especially because the Hawks just came back from a Lewis series where it was constantly close except for the last game. And they had to rely on their closer a lot more. So I'm just not a big fan of how the bullpen kind of operates when it comes to that.
Yeah, that's what I'll tell you as of right now. You know, when you got a record like we do, and I mean, granted, we're struggling to make a conference play, but this is an opportunity to use somebody else. I mean, I'm not saying you got to throw in three new pitchers for the next game, but like throw in a guy, see what he does. Put in Drager for another outing, see what he does. Give Evan a chance. You know, you gotta see what you have, other than, you know, having, oh, this is how tryouts went, this is what we're using. I mean, granted, obviously we don't know that's how it goes down, but we can assume by how many appearances Harrison, Manship, Miller have. So, I mean, that's one thing that I could say at this time. And if you have enough confidence where you think you're going to make it to the conference play, give it a chance before, you know, it's too late.
Well, and kind of just going through, as you mentioned on that conference play part, Tony, right now, here's how the conference stands out. Maryville is currently in first with a 19-2 conference record. I mean, honestly, going into the year, if you'd have told me Maryville was going to be one of the top schools, I would have been like, yeah, that's not a surprise to me, especially their closer, Noah Harbin, who's been a stud this year. Then UIndy's in second with a 17-4 record. Drury in third with a 16-5 record. All these records are conference, by the way. UMSL, Missouri St. Louis, is 13-8. Rockhurst is in fifth with 12-9. And then we had the three-way tie for 6-7-8 between Missouri S&T, Illinois Springfield, and Quincy. And then William Jewell is just right there at the nine spot, one game back of all of them. So, I mean, you got to put your foot on the gas, pedal to the metal right now to end the season, because William Jewell is right there. And even Lewis, after Quincy beat them 3 of the 4 games, Lewis is only 2 games out. Like, one bad streak and you're at a conference play and someone else can come in and sneak. So getting that bullpen spot, and kind of like you said, Tony, getting that versatility in the bullpen, starting to see what people are offering, is going to be very important, because evidently what's going on is not working right now.
Right. But I mean, all the closeness in these records makes for some entertaining end-of-season baseball for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
You're definitely right on that, Connor. Tony, you had a thought. I'm going to let you.
I was just going to ask, you know, say Quincy does make conference, what chance do you think there is?
As in to win the whole thing?
I mean, to just make it past the first round, per se.
So if they're going to get past the first round, they're going to have to find a way, because they're only a I think it's 2 games back of Rockers. They're going to need to find a way to at least get that fifth seed to get a shot of winning past the first round. Because if right now they're in the eighth, I don't think they get past Maryville. I just flat out don't. I think Maryville is just that good. UIndy, I mean, yeah, the Hawks went toe-to-toe against them yesterday at home, at their home. But I don't think they can go and beat them. Drury's a coin flip to what I think they could. But I think UMSL is like their best shot of getting in and winning in the first round. If they can face them or Rockhurst, they're going to have to play someone in that 4-5 matchup. And I don't think if they get that, unless something really changes in consistency in hitting, not leaving guys on base, and the bullpen not giving up these 2-0 leads, it's going to be a little rough.
We just might have to hope for some lucky breaks and some good goals.
And sometimes you just got to be hot going into the tournament. That's the big thing. So I still think there's hope that they can do it, but that hot streak, that Nationals-type hot streak of 2019 is going to have to start kicking in for something like that to happen. But we also have been like noticing, like you guys kind of touched on it, especially you, Tony, about the hitting. And we were kind of talking about weeks ago, like, oh, Austin Simpson, he's on that cusp of that 500 mark, because I think he was at like 460, 470 not that long ago. His average has dropped to a 430, which, again, nothing to sneeze at. Absolutely nothing to sneeze at.
You're making it sound like it's a bad thing.
I know, but ever since like everyone kind of started noticing that, it's just kind of been a downturn in his average, and I just think with this, I think he might have gotten into his own head when it comes to this kind of stuff.
You think he's pressuring himself?
I think he is. Because I think he's like, oh, I want to get to that 500 average mark so bad. But also, I think it's because like he sees like the lack of getting runners in scoring position and scoring them. And I think he just puts so much more pressure on himself that he has to bring drive in those runs.
See, I don't think he's pressuring himself to get to the 500 mark. I doubt he even cares about getting there. I think he's more pressuring himself to give the team more opportunities to score.
I will say that me and Connor went to the Lewis game where JD hit the walk-off, and we were right behind Q's dugout.
Yeah.
That's where we were standing, pretty much right behind the on-deck circle. Between Dusty and Simps, I was fearing for my life because they were very frustrated, I will say. I mean, and it wasn't just at themselves, but just at the opportunities that were getting blown. And I would never, I've talked to Simpson outside of baseball. I would never expect him to be, I mean, he had a rough game. I mean, a couple of obstruction plays that didn't get called. That was rough. I know Dusty had a rough game, taking that ball off the forearm. Seeing that up close was a little gruesome. I mean,
how fast
did that puff up? It was like 2 minutes, not even.
If that.
Yeah, it was crazy. But what I'm trying to say is I think Simps does not care as well about what he's doing specifically, like stat-wise. I think he's just upset with the fall-off of the team. I mean, you know, him and Dusty are the big hitting that's from last year. So just to, you know, carry that weight on your shoulders, I'm sure that's rough. And being in the position that they're in, I'm sure they're just not really happy at all.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really tough to have the same success they had last year. I mean,
oh yeah,
that's just unmatched. Well, like we've seen, like Broughton take the place at leadoff that D'Alessio had for so long. Simps has kind of had to go into that four spot that was kind of flip-flop between him, Logsdon, and Napleton for so long. So now kind of having to deal with all that. And Dusty, for most of the season, Dusty was the three hitter. They've kind of moved him more to the two, and they gave Cole Erickson a lot of looks over at third with the recent hot in the three spot, I should say, not at third base. They gave him a lot of opportunities. It's just very interesting how all that kind of works.
I think they went with Cole at the three spot just for pure power. I think just to put some, because Dusty's usually pretty good at getting on. and just have that protection behind them and stuff. So
I will say, though, that I like the opportunities that they give the freshmen of the hitting side of things. I just wish they would push that over to the pitching side of things. Because, I mean, Evan Davis has been, since I've saw him, he's been pretty good since that Lewis game. I mean, and I forgot, actually, that he was a part of my orientation group when I was an orientation leader. So when I saw him, I was like, because we also had a different Evan Davis in the school. And I was like, there's no way that guy plays baseball. Then when I saw him, I was like, oh, my God, that's like, you know, I met this kid before school even started. And it was just good to see that there was, you know, freshmen in the game, because it wasn't just him. It was him and I forgot who.
Talking about David Broughton?
Maybe.
I mean, David Broughton is a true freshman. That's why it's kind of really impressive that he's second on the team with an average of a 352, because the expectation going into this year was that it was going to be very difficult to replace Gino D'Alessio at that leadoff spot. I mean, while Gino has, his presence has definitely been missed, especially like when it comes to stolen bases, just getting those home runs and RBIs, which he's doing very well for himself at Abilene Christian. So, I mean,
props to him.
Props to him with that. Never going to tell a baseball player they can't do that. But it's really impressive to see the young freshman Broughton shine like he has. And I think if he can get a cut, just maybe like another year or two under his belt, I think he's going to be a dominant force, not just for Quincy baseball, not just in the GLVC, but also in Division II baseball all around, with maybe some prospects to go to a D1. Kind of have to wait and see when it comes to that. And it's just really impressive to see that. And then, yeah, you kind of touched on Evan Davis. Like, Davis had a really rough start to the year, then got to the point where they took him off the starting lineup, but now they've inserted him back into the starting lineup, and he's done very well. I mean, he's, I think when not that long ago, he's batting below 100. Now he's getting ready to bat 200. Like, he's had an upturn his season. I think that was just that transition from being a true freshman and just trying to get used to, okay, this is how it's played, this is how college is. And I think he's doing very well with that transition now. But yeah, and also, like, when we talk about transitions, like, Joe Huffman last year was spent a lot of time at third. Now he's the main shortstop. They've put him usually in like the five spot, and that's been a lot of asking for him, because last year he was usually towards the back end of the lineup, usually that 8-9 guy. And this year now they've transitioned to the five. So it's kind of just that upheaval of a roster spot where everyone's just trying to get their spot on the roster and try to adjust to the style of play and just try to keep the expectations up. And they've had an all right year. It's just, there's just little hiccups here and there that are preventing them from being top notch like we're used to seeing.
It's what next year is for.
There's always next year. I'm used to that as a Cubs fan. Also want to give a shout to JD Ortiz for the 3-run home run. And also the Santa Maria, because I know that was a fan favorite moment. So I wanted to give him a brief shout out for that. But boys, that's the big sport topic we have is going on with baseball. Now we kind of want to address our viewers about what we were talking about on the last week's podcast, the recap of WrestleMania weekend.
It was okay.
Yeah, just okay. It wasn't like it was our version of Avengers Endgame or something. It wasn't.
No, nothing special happened. You know?
It wasn't like the past two decades appeared in one match.
What? No way.
Spoilers for those who didn't watch it.
I couldn't even see anybody.
Well, we're first going to go. I'm going to go through the NXT Stand and Deliver results first, because those were part of our predictions. I was incorrect, and Joe Gacy did defeat Sean Spears on the pre-show.
Crazy.
Of course, the one time I'm wrong about a superstar returning and losing their match.
It's because it wasn't his return match. He had already lost it.
I know. Gosh.
You weren't thinking it through.
I wasn't thinking it through, no. And then the opener of the show, which, looking back in hindsight, what they did on the next show, NXT show, very interesting they went with this, was to have Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker retain their tag titles over Axiom and Nathan Frazier.
I'm not surprised, just because of Corbin finally getting his moment on a takeover.
But also, then on NXT, they decide to let Axiom and Nathan Frazier win the tag titles off Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin. So I just thought that was a very interesting thing. Why wouldn't you pull the trigger at Stand and Deliver rather than at TakeOver?
Because Corbin and Breakker were more over with the Philly crowd.
Maybe calling a last-minute audible.
I don't know if it was an audible. I think it's what they expected. So I think that the game plan going in was for them to retain.
Now is the match that we all disagreed on, which was the North American Championship match, where Femi defeated Dijak and Josh Briggs.
That match was rigged. That match
I agree that rigged. That match was rigged. If it wasn't going to be Josh Briggs, it should have been Dijak, and Dijak carried.
Dijak carried that match so well. I've never seen that guy, like, a guy that tall, maneuver the way that he does.
The Destroyer was crazy.
The Destroyer was the most insane part of that.
The weight was fully on Dijak's shoulders, and he shined bright on that night. You know what? I know Dragunov is the NXT champ, and I know, spoilers, Trick Williams is going to be the guy who challenges him next, but I would be here for Dijak to be the one to take down Dragunov.
Whoop that trick.
What? Whoop that trick.
Uh-huh. But that is the North American title match. And then the six-woman tag, as expected, Fallon Henley, Kenley Jordan, and Thea Hale with Chase Yu in their corner.
Bathroom break.
Defeated Izzy Dom, JC Jane, and Kiana James. Again, like Connor said, unfortunately, what we would say, the break match. Roxanne Perez won the NXT Women's Championship over Lyra Valkyria. So Roxy became the third ever woman in NXT history to win the NXT Women's title twice, joining Charlotte Flair and Shayna Baszler. Love to hear that kind of company. And then Ilya Dragunov defeated Tony D'Angelo for the NXT Championship. And then the main event, Connor, what did Trick Williams do to Carmelo Hayes?
He beat Melo, and I'm upset that it was not the cage match that we got to take over, especially after hearing that they booked it for next week's show. I'm a tad bit salty about it, not going to lie.
We already knew you were salty because Carmelo Hayes lost to Trick Williams.
Newest member of the Pride incoming.
Do you wish or do you think?
I believe.
Do you believe?
I believe.
Aww. Good documentary that he was part of, by the way, about his brother. Really good documentary.
His return's coming soon.
The Uncle Howdy character.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
So if I remember right, Tony, after NXT Stand Deliver, we were you, me, Connor, and then Caitlin Lowry were all tied at 5-2, if I remember right.
Yep, we're all tied at 5-2.
So now we transition to what we got to go to at one of our coaches' house, actually. We got to go and watch WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Boys, night one recap. What did we think about night one of WrestleMania?
I give it like just pushing a 4-star.
Honestly, I thought it was a good show. I definitely think it could have been better, but like, I think I can give it the 4 mark.
I would say I would give night one a 3.5 out of 5, and the big reason for it is just how disappointed I was with the Usos match.
I mean, but it's only one match. The other ones were
No. That was a very anticipated match that everybody wanted to see. They wanted that match themselves.
Hashtag blame Jimmy.
I mean, they wanted, you know, their goal was to main event brother against brother, but I mean, if that's what they were going to deliver for a main event, that's really sad.
Yeah, I agree. It's really sad. And it was really hard to put up brother versus brother compared to the last two at WrestleMania because they weren't going to touch Matt versus Jeff or Owen versus Brett. It just wasn't going to happen.
I feel like there should have been a stipulation to it.
Hell in a Cell.
What is you with the Hell in a Cell?
That's what they wanted.
I feel like that's what you specifically
wanted. You can find the interview. Jay wanted it.
Trick and Mello should have a Hell in a Cell. I'm really upset because they didn't have a Hell in a Cell, man.
No. They're in a steel cage next week. They should have had that on the takeover card.
I will say I think that's right that they should have had the steel cage match at takeover. But as for Jimmy and Jay, I think Tony's right on that. There should have been a stipulation. And yes, Connor, just using Hell in a Cell in GM mode, it doesn't always pan out like that because we get last year's Hell in a Cell match with Edge and Balor.
But, I mean, you look at some of the stipulations that were on the card. There was something severely missing from the stipulations this year.
At least when it comes, I'd say, to night one. I think night two kind of had a little more to it. But night one, definitely, that's why I gave it a 3.5. And also, like, the middle of the show just kind of dragged in night one. Like,
which matches? Like,
Rey and Andrade versus Santos and Dirty Dom, like, kind of just dragged. It was really just there for the celebrity push to have Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson there just to get the baby face over. I mean,
it was fun watching everybody fly.
It was fun, but it's also like...
It was really fun.
After coming down from Rhea Ripley versus Becky Lynch, which was a great opener.
I mean, do you really think they're going to top that going after or somewhere at all in that card? I just didn't see it.
No, because anyone coming after Mommy wasn't going to go over.
So what do we think of live music performance entrance music?
Oof. It can be done.
It's got to be done right, though.
Yep, because that mic issue was very awkward.
I think live music entrances work better in smaller arenas.
I mean... Punk's at one time was really good. It was agreed. Really good.
Definitely agreed. But I think now with them trying to pack 70,000 a night, it's almost easier to do live in the smaller arenas where you can get the sound through it better.
Yeah.
But I think we're all happy to see Mommy retain the world's women's championship.
Calling it right now, whoever wins Money in the Bank is cashing in on Rhea Ripley.
Sadness ensue.
I feel like there's only two people that could potentially beat Rhea, and it's Bianca or Jade. Like
Jade.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Jade's push will be crazy, and I don't think they'll put her out and then shut her down right at the end. Like, I think once she gets that opportunity to get to Rhea, she's gonna win.
I mean, because we're coming up to the point to where people are going to start saying about Rhea's reign the same thing they're saying about Roman's. It's going on for too long, this, that, and everything else.
But how do you think, is her losing potentially to Jade, would that affect the bloodline, or you think it's going to be gone before then, and this is just, like, carried over because the bloodline is done? Or not the bloodline, sorry, Judgment Day. I'm sorry.
I don't know how to feel. I don't know how that breakup is going to affect it. I think Dom is just going to leave, and it's going to be the same thing just without Dom.
Well, if you ask the IWC, there's only one answer. It's Liv Morgan.
I mean, it would make sense if you look at the way they've built the story from last year going into this year.
But unfortunately, because the problem with Liv Morgan that WWE's kind of booked themselves into a corner with is you really can't do the Daniel Bryan story with her because she's been made to look like a chump. Like, even when Bryan was losing and we were in 2013 and fans were wanting the Yes Movement and everything, Daniel Bryan still was in the main event constantly. He was constantly still in a thorn in Triple H's side. I just don't feel that way about Liv with Rhea. I just don't. It feels like she's just more of a pest.
I think Bryan also had the better story because of what he did before WWE, where Liv doesn't have that. So she doesn't really have the fan support like Bryan did.
But then why keep pushing her? Because, you know, like Royal Rumble, she was the 30th, and she was in the final four and all that, and like, people were, you were questioning, like, do you think she's going to win?
I mean, she's really good. She's got the story if they let her shine with it. I think it's time she gets another chance. I think she gets hated on more than she should. But I agree. They make her look like a chump, but they shouldn't, because she's one of their big stars now, and who knows how long she's going to be here for.
Why, you think TK's going to fork over the cash?
When doesn't he fork over the cash?
Correction. When doesn't his father let him fork over the cash?
Their revenue rating was insane.
But we got the tag team match, and every single one of us on this podcast called it. They were splitting the tag titles. We had two winners. A-Town Down Under, Austin Theory, and Grayson Waller win the SmackDown tag titles, and R-Truth finally got his moment at WrestleMania with the Awesome Truth winning the Raw tag titles.
So I actually want to point out something sad about that that I just recently read yesterday, actually. So R-Truth, I believe it was his cousin, who's been his biggest supporter through his career, actually ended up having a stroke while Truth was competing in the match at WrestleMania. While he is surviving, Truth went straight to the hospital after, and he just sent out a picture saying this is what happened, this, that, and everything else. So well wishes to him for sure.
Absolutely. Our hearts and our prayers go out to R-Truth and his family with that whole unfortunate situation. But I think it's really cool, though, that he did get that moment at WrestleMania.
Completely agreed.
Especially with the biggest pop of the night, one, with the tag in from The Miz.
The hot tag in a ladder match. Go figure.
I think what made that even better was when they were talking backstage after the match, and Miz was like, you know, you thought this was like a regular match, and the fans even thought that. And he's like, I know, but I got us to win. We got the belts. And he was just so happy. It was funny.
And the promo he cut on Raw where he brought the tag titles back to the Judgment Day.
Yeah, that was even funnier.
I will say, though, when we were at our coach's house watching this, we were all just like shocked at A-Town Down Under won. Like, it was like that. Huh?
I was just shocked at how fast they won, and like, it was just unexpected because, you know, it's Waller in theory.
Nobody wanted them to win, but the more I think about it, the more I think this could be so good for their characters.
I mean, hey, if anything goes by it, the winner post that WWE made with Austin Theory, the casual Riz.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that picture was. That picture was hilarious, though.
It's you, Tony.
No. I wish I had muscles like that. Come on.
I mean, I could see it. I could see you being... Might want to get a DNA test with Austin Theory there, Tony. Might want to get one.
Okay.
So you got any relation there?
I don't got the ego that he does, though.
You also don't got the boss that supported him.
I also don't got the financial situation.
But the paycheck sounds great, right?
But yeah, so
you know what? I also don't have. I also don't have them playing crowd noises when I go in onto this ring.
You also don't have the SmackDown tag team titles.
And you don't have an Aussie tag team partner.
Oi, oi, oi!
Now, so that, but that was a great match. Like the problem with that match was either it was going to be like a great match or it was going to be an absolute. Well, how do I want to word this in a PG brother kind of way?
You can't.
dumpster fire. Let's call it a dumpster fire.
How about that DDT from Gargano, though?
Ooh. Did you see Drewski's reaction to that? He was like, oh, my God, this is so real. He was like, man, I didn't believe it until I saw that. That is too real.
I can't wait till we talk about the real things at WrestleMania.
So we've already kind of touched on Rey Andrade winning. We touched on our disappointment with Jay and Jimmy's match. Again, those two should have had a much better match for what they kind of talked about it for years with. It was just super kick party. No Young Bucks were found anywhere. There, at least.
I'm still blaming Jimmy.
Of course you are, because the Yeet Man cannot be at fault for that.
I'm still blaming Punk. You know, it's his fault why the Young Bucks weren't there.
Just kidding. Oh, we'll get into that part. We'll get into that.
And then, what are you talking about?
Well, then also the six-woman tag on WrestleMania. Jade, Bianca, Naomi defeated Damage Control. It was a good match for what it was for, but it just was kind of there.
That match to me was a big... It was
everything we expected it to be. I mean...
But speaking about things we didn't expect it to be, it's the Intercontinental title. Sami Zayn did it. We were all wrong. Sami Zayn finished his story.
That's what won
the Intercontinental Championship.
He's the Rocky.
That's what pushed Night One to be a 4-star. Because the Usos ruined it. But because the Usos were so bad, Sami and Gunther had a match that was so well that and it like almost canceled out anything that we saw before. But.
And the top rope brain buster. I can't get over it still.
You were talking about realistic. How much do you think that hurts to take a top rope brain buster on that?
They did that very safely. They did it really well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it done in the rinky-dink gyms that they've wrestled at in years prior. I think with the WWE rings, I think the padding is so strong that it doesn't actually hurt as bad as you would think.
But I remember when they were getting ready to do it, Connor, you looked over at me and said, are they really going to let him do it? They let him do it.
I still think Kevin should have been the first one to take it, but I was so here for it.
They did a lot of things over the weekend that was like, are they really letting this happen? Like, they almost let that Randy Orton punt happen.
Thank you for no more Vince McMahon.
Yes.
This is the Triple H era now.
The Paul Levesque era.
Levesque.
I'm sticking to it.
Fine. But guess what? I'm a Paul Heyman guy, too, so.
And he's a Triple H guy, so we're running right back into the same circle here.
But yeah, that match was just so good. They built if they were not going to let Chad Gable be the one to beat Gunther, which I mean, I think we're still all of us are still like, eh, we probably should have been Chad.
We love Chad.
What do you mean Chad's going to win on Monday night?
But Sami Zayn deserved that moment, and surprisingly enough, his chest did not start bleeding from Gunther's chops.
I think Gunther's chest was more red than his.
Yeah, I don't think Gunther gave enough chops.
Yeah, I also agree.
I think he only gave like 16 chops to Sammy.
The more the better.
Yeah, he did give him about that much, but they weren't like good chops.
They were overhand, not like his normal flip you backwards type chops.
I don't care. I think this sets perfectly up for something down the line for Gunther. I think Gunther looked amazing in defeat because he just wasn't beat like out of the blue with a one Helluva kick. Top rope brainbuster, two Helluva kicks, and Sammy basically just takes all the energy he has left just to cover him to win. I think if you're going to have Gunther lose this belt, that was the way you had to do it.
All I know is Cody Rhodes better watch his back. Down the road, Gunther's showing up.
Actually, I think it's more Damian Priest who needs to watch his back.
I don't know, man.
I don't think they'd put on a good match.
There's some.
I think they would, but I think it would be slow.
That's what I'm saying. Like I'm here for the fast action, partially high flying. You never know.
You know, but I don't think Cody and Gunther would do that either. I think they would also have a slower type match. But I mean, I'm here either way.
But I think we could all agree Sammy Gunther was the match of the night for night one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and for me it was actually a little close because I really liked the main event on night one.
Well, in transition to that. It was the main event. It was the biggest tag team match ever between Roman Reigns and The Rock versus Cody and Seth.
Correction, biggest tag team match so far. Because this one coming up will be great.
I mean, I can't lie. I'm a little upset that they didn't just make the tag match no disqualification because it's what it turned into.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was for me, that was annoying because it was like, they didn't specify what the match was going in. You know, they just said whatever they usually say. The match is scheduled for
one fall.
Thanks. But meaning, you know, it's a classic match. That's it. But then you see The Rock and
Seth going into the crowd.
Go through the crowd. Roman and Cody's at the top of the ramp. I don't even know if they made it to the top of the ring.
I mean, the weight belt was used, everything was used, and it was crazy.
I think that match went for 44 minutes, but that whole segment went for like an hour with entrances.
I think the build at the start of the match, the big Tony Wolfsburg used an ego off, essentially.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was just showing off your ego. How I am who I am. Let's see how the crowd reacts to me while I look around real fast.
It's everything you would expect from a Rock match, truly. But The Rock looked better in the ring than he did in his last run in the mid-2010s by miles.
Yeah, I think this guy Parker here was telling me, I was telling him that Rock said that he's been going like crazy and trying to make sure that he puts on a great performance, and Parker was, I'll believe it when I see it.
I didn't see it for that first half of that match.
Do you believe now?
I believe it for what I saw in the second half of that match is what I believe in. I believe he can give a good performance.
If anybody wants to know, it's very hard to prove Parker wrong. So to have this opportunity, I'm blessed.
Thank you.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Honestly, but the match ended the way all of us kind of expected, with The Rock pinning Cody to force Bloodline rules into night two.
Which also didn't get specified on what the heck that means.
What do you mean? Bloodline rules. There are no rules. I'm just kidding.
So no DQ?
So just using context clues to the last Bloodline rules match, that's the thought process I had going in.
But yeah, I mean, the match was fine. It didn't make Seth have to take the fall for that night. Foreshadowing. Roman didn't have to take the fall that he would take. And you set up Rock Cody down the line for SummerSlam. We'll get into that, though, because we're going to transition to night two. Drew McIntyre defeated Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight Championship. Oh, wait, Damian Priest is here, and he cashes in on McIntyre, and Priest is now world champion.
You're forgetting a major part in that whole situation there.
No, I'm not. I am clearly not forgetting a certain guy from Chicago.
Pepsi Phil.
Pepsi Phil. No,
Wait, Tony, your dad was there?
Yeah. Yeah. I literally should have a brand deal with Pepsi, but it's fine. No, it was just funny because me and Connor were sitting right next to each other during it. And, you know, I was like, because we were all complaining about night one. We were like, why doesn't Damian Priest just cash in right now, mess up all of night two? Like, how crazy would that be? But it was good that he didn't. And it was like me and Connor were like live betting what was going to happen. And I had it called. I had it called that Damian Priest was, because it was too long of after McIntyre won. It was too long, like, oh, he's going up to his girlfriend, wife?
Yeah, I don't actually know if they're married or not.
But going up to her, kneeling down and holding the belt up to her, then getting in Punk's face at the announcer's table, it was destined for something to happen. It was too long of a outro of the match to not have Damian Priest show up.
That arm's looking awfully healthy on Punk, too, by the way.
He beat him with a cast.
I mean, yeah, but that's the first time we've seen him use both arms since he was hurt.
Is he super-seening this whole thing?
Hopefully, but the one thing I want to talk about this match is Seth Rollins' entrance in the gear was fantastic.
What was this? I understood it's a Pennsylvania whole celebration for New Year's, which was really out of the ordinary, but it looked like it was some more like from Mardi Gras.
I think that's what they were going for.
I was still here for it.
Because then you got to think about when the Eagles won the Super Bowl and what the heck Jason Kelce was wearing when, you know, he was wearing like that neon green, neon pink jester looking outfit, giving his speech. And
the best center ever.
Hey, I have to think about that.
I don't disagree.
I love him. I have to think about that. If you haven't watched the Kelce documentary, it's so good.
Agreed.
So good. But yeah, no, I think that entrance was pretty funny. I liked it. I was here for his outfits. I'm always here for his outfit. I'm not here for last year's WrestleMania outfit. I still don't know what that was, with like the pink like jacket thing. I still don't know what, and he wore that during the match. That was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it was something.
Hey. But he is the visionary, all right?
Whoa.
Whoa.
Anyhow, so yes, I think this really sets up Punk versus McIntyre down the line. Seth, and rumors are Seth and Becky are going to take some time off of wrestling.
Good.
Go.
4 weeks.
4 weeks, yeah. 4 weeks, probably. But they're going to go off and do their own thing. And Damian Priest, this sets up the Judgment Day to collapse with Finn Balor.
Forgot to say props to Becky for that match, by the way, because wrestling with 100-plus degree fever, I'd be scared I'm going to throw up somewhere along the line.
Especially get hit in the stomach that much.
Or get fatigued, like, real fast. I'm sure she was majorly fatigued.
Agreed.
I'm surprised that she had to have a bucket as soon as she got backstage.
Yeah, that was bad.
And then the third match that happened on night two was the Philadelphia Street Fight. The Pride, Bobby Lashley, and the Street Profits defeated the Final Testament, Karrion Kross, and the Authors of Pain.
Personally?
Dudley.
Personally, this, like, for all of night two, that's my bathroom break match.
I mean, yeah.
I did not like it.
It was put in for it. I think it was everything it was supposed to be. I mean, they threw in the Hall of Fame cameo. And the.
I think why was Dudley there? I get it. Like, everybody loves him, and I love him too. I just, no purpose to be there. They botched the table.
Well, I don't know if that was them or if that was just the.
That was Bobby not knowing how to set up a table. That's a botched table. So then they had to play it off for another 4 minutes to go grab another table. Snoop on the mic was horrible. Yeah, I don't care what anybody says.
I agree with that. It was bad.
I just think that was one big
whoop that trick.
Yeah, like they say, whoop that trick. Where the heck is trick in this match, all right?
Yeah. Completely random reference during a match that did not need it. It was just what it was, like Connor said. It was another celebrity involvement match with the baby faces going over. Or the baby faces. They're tweeners. Then we got to LA Knight versus AJ Styles, which this is an important match for the future. Because, I mean, even though LA Knight won this, there's some a little more importance that's going on.
AJ's new theme song is fire.
I agree. I think that was pretty good. I think LA Knight's intro was giving me some, like, John Cena type stuff where he's flying around in the car. I mean, props to that lady. She was, whatever that lady is, I wish I was there
for
that.
She won a Slim Jim car.
That's sick. And I'm sure she could probably easily take off the wrapping of the car, but.
You wouldn't want to drive a Slim Jim
car? I would not want to drive that car.
I would drive it.
I would drive it for like the first month. And then I'd be like, all right, I don't want to pull up into work with. Like, that lady could probably be like, I don't know, like a financial accountant or something, and she's gonna pull up into the firm, and she's just gonna have a Slim Jim car.
Imagine she's a lawyer with a Slim Jim car,
right? Like, what if she's a police woman pulling up to the station with a Slim Jim car?
Ooh, snap into a Slim Jim!
Oh yeah! I mean, the match was all right. It wasn't anything special, but it was a good solid match that LA Knight won that he should have won.
Best counter to the springboard 450. It was the best looking counter I've ever seen. Simple but effective.
And I think these two are going to see each other down the line.
With AJ beating LA Knight.
Yeah. And then we get to the match that would end up determining our predictions. That triple threat for the U.S. title when Logan Paul retained over Randy Orton and KO.
Shout out to Speed.
Taking that RKO like a champ and then going out in ambulance.
I bounced.
Yeah. That poor announcer's table just not breaking was hilarious. It's the fact that it took all the way to the last match to get one of the announcement tables to break.
And then, yeah, that was.
Cause how many times did they throw somebody onto the announcement table and it didn't break?
A lot.
I know they did it once in the Philly Street Fight. Punk did it to McIntyre in the McIntyre Seth match. So it happened quite a bit actually before it broke.
But yeah, I mean, Logan Paul is so good. I don't know what to say about him.
I don't think there was a wrong choice if any of the three men won that match. Truly.
Yeah, I mean, Randy needs another run.
The entrances were also extremely fire with the golf cart and the Prime truck.
I was going to say, I'm more for the Prime truck with a cannon on the back of it.
And over here, I was indulging in my Prime addiction with my lemonade Prime.
I wonder who you wanted to win the match, right?
Yeah, I wonder who I wanted to win. Not like I had him in predictions that would secure my victory if he won.
How long till Logan Paul becomes a world champion?
It's happening down the line, but how soon really depends on how all the main event storylines pan out.
I think it depends on how long he wants to stay in the company.
Because I think he's having a great time.
I think he is too. I think he's really happy. I mean, it helps his podcast impulsive. It helps them because he's had like John Cena, Rhea Ripley, Randy Orton. He has all these people come in, and it helps. It helps with that. And then, I mean, I don't know because he switched up so many times on what the heck he wants to do. If he sticks around, I think he has a really good chance for it within a year or two.
Because I think Logan versus Cody would be really fun.
I wonder why we keep saying Cody with a lot of this stuff when it comes to world title matches. I wonder why.
Everybody knew what was going to happen.
No, we didn't. You already know. That was one of the greatest WrestleMania main events I've ever seen. But besides the point.
Second greatest. HBK and Taker will always be number one.
Fair enough.
Agreed. Or, actually, right after that for me personally, Steamboat Savage.
In just WrestleMania matches or WrestleMania main events?
It was billed as a main event.
I don't know. There was something called Hogan Andre, I think, that happened at that WrestleMania.
Wasn't as good as Hogan's or Savage.
I saw a TikTok. I was telling Connor about this. A little kid asked Roman Reigns what his favorite match ever was. And he said it was at WrestleMania, and it was Yokozuna versus Bret Hart.
Which one?
I don't know.
The one.
There's two of them. Which one?
I don't remember which one he said.
Is it the infamous one or the famous one?
You just said famous twice. No, I'm just kidding.
Infamous.
How do you spell infamous? Infamous.
He's got you there.
Fine. Check and mate there, pal.
No, I don't know. That's just what he told him. I'm sure he told him a year. I just wasn't listening enough. I just knew, you know.
But I know we want to get into a bit more stuff before we wrap up here. Bayley defeated Io Sky for the WWE Women's Championship.
Fucker. I felt like that match could have been more. It seemed kind of... like I was so happy. I enjoyed it. I just thought they could have done more together.
I'll tell you what I did not like about WrestleMania. The amount of knee injuries they had to play off during matches. Bayley had one. Seth both nights felt so bad for the guy.
For real.
It was just like every match it seemed like somebody had like a slight injury going on.
It's just unfortunate with how many knee injuries have happened to their main event stars.
Knee injuries to main event stars is like Tommy John to the MLB.
Don't get me started.
I've had 5 surgeries in my left knee. But yeah, I mean,
don't try this at home.
And then you proceed to go outside and elbow drop your friend off of your roof of your house.
What? Who would do that?
No, you just hit WWE finishers on trampolines.
Yep, we go in. We've all done it. The art with the RKO. We've all done it. And a Batista bomb.
And shooting stars casually. Imagine.
I had
a lot of trouble in Paradises.
Ooh, yeah. Sweet Tooth music for sure.
Trouble. A trampoline?
Yeah.
I feel like you botched your knee on that.
But it was a good match. Was it better than Rhea Becky? I didn't think so, but I thought it was a solid match.
I don't think any women's match topped that. Rhea and Becky.
Not this year, bro.
But, boys, it was our end game for the main event. Bloodline Rules, Universal, the undisputed WWE Universal Championship, Cody Rhodes finally finished the story and pinned Roman Reigns 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring.
So I'll be honest, the one thing that I thought was really cool was the mask that Cody was wearing was made by the same guy that was Bray's best friend and did all the stuff for The Fiend and for Bray and his return and everything. And, you know, the return of Brandi Rhodes was awesome too. I mean,
I will say, I'm a little disappointed he didn't come out to partially Dusty's theme.
Agreed.
Or Homelander. Could have done.
Or all of the above.
I mean, it'll come, but I think it's going to happen when Cody's a heel when he goes full Homelander.
No, he's going to bring back Smoke and Mirrors. Come on.
He's going to bring back Stardust.
But that song was fire, though. That theme song for Stardust, top notch.
I think this match, though, we were all marking out this entire match.
Yeah, I think the match started out very, you know, casual. It's whatever. I think it was still an ego boost for both. I mean, more Roman than Cody, but, you know, when you have the whole Philly crowd against you.
Yeah.
Well, like they were against him, but with him at the same time, because I saw a lot of people acknowledging him. But as we acknowledge him here, but no, I think it was very expected for some people to show up. It was expected for the Bloodline side. Everybody was curious as to who's showing up for Cody.
We knew Jay was going to show up because you know,
and just casually spear his brother off the ramp, just casually through a table.
When that 30-second clip was much better than their entire match.
Oh yeah.
Oof. And then Solo came out. They were teasing they were going to do it again, having Solo cost Cody, and Cody kicked out of not just a Samoan spike, but the Samoan spike spear combo.
Twice. That's how you knew Cody was winning. I mean, the first one, I expected him to kick out. For the first time when Solo came out, and then when he hit the second move on him with the spear, I was like, oh.
When we were all starting to prepare for the worst.
Yeah, we were all... I was waiting for the text from Kaylin saying, I acknowledge my tribal chief, blah, blah, blah. Sorry, Kaylin. That did not happen. And I know you're sad. We miss you here. But that wasn't the case. I mean, from then on, I think you kind of knew this was Cody's match to win.
And then the... I didn't know. I didn't see anyone coming up the ramp, man. I mean, I heard the Wapple duel, do, 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 do. I heard that, and I didn't see anyone come down the ring. All of a sudden, Solo was clotheslined over the top rope by some invisible force.
No, but for real with John Cena, that was crazy. I mean, we kind of expected it. But what really made me happy was the re-image of him and The Rock. Both looking at left and right.
11 years later.
And then Cena ate a rock bottom because why not? Because it's the final boss.
And then it happened.
And no glass was shattered.
Dog.
We all lost our minds with that because I think every single one of us were anticipating it to be the glass breaking and Stone Cold come out, which it looked like they wanted to do, but they couldn't come to an agreement with Austin on it. So, Undertaker's out there, baby.
We were still here for the Undertaker, though.
We were all losing our minds when this was going on. Like
my inner Teddy Long.
My inner Teddy Long. And that is one of the best reactions I've ever seen in a wrestling show.
And it made for a really good meme.
Yeah.
Where The Rock's just looking out and then you swipe the camera or swipe the picture to the left, and then there's just Undertaker just looking at him.
It's like the AJ Styles Undertaker meme of years ago.
It's the new meme for a new era.
Yeah, I think that was the only actual meme I saw from WrestleMania. And really, then, like really.
So. Yeah.
And then it's the beautiful part. We forgot about Seth coming out, getting Superman punched by Roman, and the most poetic finale.
The only reason Cody won.
Roman has the chair, can hit Cody with it, but he sees Seth getting up.
And he thinks about the revenge.
10 years earlier.
And whacks Seth with a chair. He goes to a corner to go spear Cody. Cody counters into three crossroads and finishes the story.
I really thought somebody else was going to come out again because he was going for a third one again.
They were just saving the Bloodline debut for Friday.
I love Seth. And I love the foreshadowing that he put into the match or the writing that was put into foreshadowing for this match. I just really wish it was Dean.
They didn't even reach out
I know.
To ask.
It's just like, then you go on TikTok and you see all these TikToks on people like, imagine if it was Dean. Imagine if it was.
But Dean wouldn't have turned on Roman. He was Roman's only true friend.
That's not what he said.
I would hit him. I would hit him with the dirty deeds.
I would have been so happy because I thought it was happening too. I won't deny it.
Yeah, you were looking over at me and said Dean.
Well, I mean, because you think WrestleMania, biggest time of the year, you hear the Shield music, you think they're all going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, you don't think that Rollins would come out after how bad his injury was with Drew McIntyre. So when you hear Sierra Hotel India Echo Lima Delta Shield. You're not thinking Seth's gonna come out. I just like, and the crowd's reaction to it. You see everybody looking around trying to figure out where is he coming from. But I mean, I just wish it was Dean. But you know, he's on doing better things right now.
Yeah, making history.
Making history.
That weird stat line of no member of the Shield being a world champion anywhere or a champion period lasted all of 5 days.
Yeah.
Moxley and New Japan world champ. But unfortunately, we don't have all that time to talk about that.
There's too much to cover in that.
just some brief notes about the post-WrestleMania stuff. We had our two triple threat matches to determine who's going to be Cody's first challenger. It was LA Knight and AJ Styles who won those triple threats. Those two are going to face off. Is it next week?
Yeah.
For who's going to face him at Backlash?
Yep.
It's time for the evil ways to take control. AJ's going to win that match.
How do we feel about Tama Tonga?
Indeed. Tama Tonga debuts for WWE and Solo brutalizes Jimmy Uso and kicks him out of the bloodline. And we have a new tribal chief.
Tony, care to touch on your prediction?
Yeah. So me and Connor were talking about it afterwards, and we were just talking about what we think is going to happen down the road, and Jimmy and Jay are going to make up. That's just destined to happen, and you know they're going to need their mentor, aka Roman,
the big dog.
Is he going to go back to the Big Dog brand?
I hope not.
Big Dog.
And in this scenario, what is Paul Heyman going to do?
Insert Brock Lesnar. I'm just kidding.
Insert Suplex City. Everybody's getting suplexed.
Insert Punk and Heyman?
No, but...
Bring back Cesaro, have the Paul Heyman faction.
No, but we were talking about how we think they're going to get together and... with their honorary Oos, Sammy. But that's also a question on what are they going to do with Sammy's title, you know?
I mean, that prediction is a long ways away. Right. So, I mean, it should be Chad Gable. Not this week, but down the line.
But down the road, we're saying new in quotations, new bloodline versus old bloodline.
I'm here for it.
War Games at Survivor Series. Why not? Winner is the Tribal Chief.
And you still set up for Rock Roman if they decide to go that route.
Which I think that's written in the stars they're going to. I think Cody Rock is going to be at SummerSlam for the title.
They're talking about doing Rock Cody at Mania next year.
I think it's better to do it SummerSlam, get the Rock at SummerSlam, and then do Roman Rock Mania to main event night one next year.
I don't hate it. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm tired of Cody versus the Bloodline now that it's over. I don't want to see it again.
But yeah. Speaking of tired things, the last thing we're going to talk about, it came from Dynamite, the footage.
CM Punk did nothing wrong.
Well, I wouldn't say he didn't do nothing wrong, but he didn't lie about what he said.
I would say he didn't do anything wrong. You know, you got a situation where...
Where Jack wants to do
Jack wants to do something crazy. TK can't do his job, and
they ask Punk to handle it.
Yeah, they ask Punk to handle it. He tries to confront him about it, and this guy wants to make a bigger deal about it, and it leads to a shove and a slight chokehold. What's wrong with that?
And I mean, Punk even said multiple times that you sure you want me to handle it. You won't like the way I handle it. They still had him handle it. But the one thing that I find funny about this whole thing, right, is they showed it on Dynamite. Last night at the New Japan show, Jack Perry showed up with a jacket that said Cry Me a River and tried to use to go to sleep in his match in Chicago.
He's a great heel. Don't get me wrong. I just think the guy underneath the Jungle Boy, or not anymore Jungle Boy, just Jack Perry now, gimmick is he's a little too big for his own good.
It just proves that Tony Khan isn't a boss and Jack Perry needs to get checked.
Yeah, because I think that's the big reason why he went to New Japan, because I don't think he feels like he's going to be checked there.
Well, he wanted to release Ray W. Tony Khan won't give it to him.
Well, because Tony Khan doesn't want to let him go because he sees that that's a hot commodity that he'd be letting go with the storyline.
I mean, at this point, what storyline? What could you do with it?
Absolutely nothing now. But I think, and I also didn't see where TK said, I was fearing for my life. Because when I heard I'm fearing for my life, I'm thinking like Punk like is choking Jack Perry on the table, the production shit table. Or like they're fighting right there and Tony Khan's getting almost in the action. Like kind of like that. But Punk just goes over to him and just says, you're a clown. This company's a clown show and you're a clown, essentially.
I quit.
Yeah, and then he went out and did it, and he had a great match with Samoa Joe, because why not?
And you can't say that you fear for your life when, you know, Punk pushed him and then put him in a chokehold, and somebody told him to stop, and he stopped. It's not like he was resisting stoppage and continuing to choke out Jack Perry.
I mean, honestly, Tony Khan's lucky that CM Punk even did the match because he was friends with Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to touch about real quick is Will Ospreay absolutely trashing Triple H when Triple H never even said his name.
It's just the AEW thing. You just got to put WWE in your mouth because otherwise no one cares. And I actually give props to the Young Bucks that they did not want to show the footage on Dynamite.
I still don't know how to feel about that. Like, I believe it to be true, but I also could see them wanting to do it just because.
I think the Young Bucks aren't allergic to money.
Well, because, I mean, Matt Jackson literally wore a Jack Perry shirt.
Was that his design, or is that just Tony Khan saying, you need to do this?
I think it was their design, because they're friends with Jungle Boy.
Fair enough, I suppose. But I think that was bad. That entire show was a bad look for AEW.
It backfired on them horribly. CM Punk was number one trending for hours after the show went off the air.
Not even just that. It gets more eyes on the WWE product, which is counterintuitive to what AEW is trying to do.
They're two separate companies. Can we just leave it that way?
I wanted to leave it that way. I think that's how we should do it, but AEW just doesn't seem to want to let it go.
I don't know. Tony Khan's just not getting no ground on it.
I don't think Tony Khan has the backbone for that company to let go, and I think he ruined his chance to give us a true competitor to the WWE, because now I feel like AEW will never get there.
Also, the Will Ospreay thing, I think, you know, when you're getting paid that money to make a slight-ish comment, I would do it too if I'm getting paid what he gets paid.
Yeah, I agree. I believe he's getting overpaid, even though he's just that good.
And say it comes to, like, a lawsuit thing. Will Ospreay did nothing wrong. He was told to do what he did what he was told to do.
Agreed.
Absolutely, but that's kind of been the wacky world of pro wrestling, and that's where we're going to wrap things up. Boys, I want to say thank you so much for coming on to the show here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. It was actually really fun today.
And it's always a pleasure. And thank you for listening to this edition of the Hawk Talk Podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. You can find past, present, and future episodes on QUmedia.net. Have a great rest of your day. And remember, it's a great day to be a hawk. Caw!